Welcome to the Inspiring Social Entrepreneurs Podcast. My name is Fergal Byrne. Every week, I talk to inspiring social entrepreneurs and changemakers dedicated to building a better world. Here, they tell their stories, the highs and the lows, and share what they have learned to help other social entrepreneurs and changemakers on their journeys.
Well, our core vision is the insight that every single person in Africa is going to have a mobile device in the next couple of years. What we try and do, and our philosophy and our vision really is to say, what are the life-saving services that we can build and deliver over mobile devices? For any person who's thinking about building a social enterprise, I would always say, start with the people that you're trying to reach. Paul Pollack used to have these rules, the three don't bother rules, and his first rule was, if you haven't spoken to 25 people that you're trying to reach, don't bother.
I'm very excited to be introducing Gustav Prekelt, founder of the Prekelt Foundation. The Prekelt Foundation develops open source and scalable mobile technologies and solutions to improve the health and well-being of people living in poverty. It's developed programs that have reached over 50 million people across 15 countries in sub-Saharan Africa. Programs like MAMA, a program that provides pregnant women and new mothers with information and support through their mobile phones. Another project harnesses the mobile phone as a high-impact, low-cost tool in the fight against HIV, AIDS, and TB. Gustav is a passionate advocate of the idea that technology should be available to everyone. He's currently working on a new project to bring Wikipedia to Africans who don't have smartphones. Welcome.
So, excellent. Well, welcome, and thank you very much for taking the time to share with us your experience and journey. So, could you tell us a little bit about your background and how you ended up setting up the foundation and what it is you do?
My name is Gustav Prekelt, and I'm the founder of the Prekelt Foundation and also Prekelt Consulting. And we run two organizations. One is a for-profit, one is a non-profit. Both of them build what we call population-scale mobile systems for the developing world. And so in both cases, we specialize in building software that runs on mobile phones that deliver life-saving and other information to people living in the developing world. How we got to this point, I'm an engineer by training. I studied computer science and straight after finishing university, I started my first startup. So I've always been an entrepreneur and I've always been in business. And I love the idea of combining technology or using technology to not necessarily just make the world a better place. It's, I think more engineers are inherently optimistic. They wouldn't become engineers if they didn't think they could make the world more interesting and better, and function better, if I could put it that way. And that was something that I always found appealing. And my first startup was used internet technology and was an internet startup and one of the first ones in Africa. And I ran that for 10 years. At that stage, I just felt I wasn't achieving, I wasn't really happy. It was a very large company and we were building software that I didn't think was really having an impact, the type of impact that I thought we could have. And a turning point for me was when I traveled to Dar es Salaam and I was walking around the streets, and this is about 10 years ago now, actually about 12 years ago now, and every single person I saw, almost every single person had a mobile phone. And what was really interesting to me is it's a poor country, yet there was this really high density of mobile telephony, and people were not using the mobile phones to make calls. They were using them to text. And so I thought, this is really interesting. People are, first of all, there's high penetration of mobile devices, so there's obviously opportunity. And secondly, the technology is being subverted. It's used, being used in a different way from which people originally were planning or had intended the technology to be used. And that was inspiration for Prekelt Consulting, my for-profit, which we now started 10 years ago. And the intention was to ride on that wave, to leverage that installed base of mobile phones, and also to try and understand how people really use those phones, to really dig deeply and try and figure out how what people's real needs are and how we can build software to address those needs. And that's really how the for-profit started 10 years ago.
Excellent. So, interesting question. Social entrepreneurship, what does that mean to you? And because you have a for-profit and you have a non-profit, put it all together, making a profit and a social mm-hmm. impact. You characterize yourself as a social mm-hmm. entrepreneur. What does it mean to be a social entrepreneur?
Social entrepreneurship is always such a loaded and interesting term. I've got a really good friend, Kevin Starr, from the Mulago Foundation, who says that a social entrepreneur is an entrepreneur who doesn't lose too much money, which I find really interesting. For us, really, my background is as an entrepreneur, and being an entrepreneur means building new technologies and making a profit. And so I don't think you can be an entrepreneur without making a profit somewhere. I guess the social side of it comes in by having a social impact. It's an interesting question, though, because if you look at Africa, almost any entrepreneur building infrastructure, building software, or building companies is going to have a social impact in Africa. So it's almost a truism that an entrepreneur is a social entrepreneur already. I think the reason we call ourselves a social entrepreneur, a social business, really, is we have an explicit statement that we feel our work needs to have a social impact and has to make the world a better place for people, specifically in the developing world. But for us, the underpinnings of this is always still being a profitable business.
Excellent. Very interesting. Can you tell me a little bit about some of your exciting projects? Because you have some very exciting health projects and innovative projects in terms of information delivery, and I'd love to hear more about that.
Well, our core vision is the insight that every single person in Africa is going to have a mobile device in the next couple of years. Already we're in the place in South Africa where there are more phones than human beings. And now this is a country with the highest Gini coefficient, in other words, the most inequality of any country in the world, yet every single person's got a mobile device. And so what we try and do in our philosophy and our vision really is to say, what are the life-saving services that we can build and deliver over mobile devices? And so based on that principle, what we really try and do is look at what people need and what they state themselves their needs are. And can we somehow deliver a piece of information or a service or a transactional component to them that can address that need? Can we do this over mobile phones in a way that's sustainable? And then finally, can we scale it up? So in other words, can we address the majority of a population of a particular country? And that's really the framework. That's how we think about our services. An example of one of these services is MAMA, which is the Mobile Alliance for Maternal Action, which we launched in South Africa with a number of international partners, including USAID and Johnson & Johnson. And that aims to deliver stage-based messages to every single mother every week of her pregnancy and also for the first year of her baby's life, and gives her the type of information that she needs to care for her child. And it provides this to mothers that previously had absolutely no access to public health information in very, very rural and difficult to reach places. We think it's a really exciting project because it's a universal service and it's completely free. So it'll allow every mother in South Africa, as long as she's registered on the service, to receive this free information. Another example of a project that we're working on is called Wikipedia Text. Now, Wikipedia, everybody knows about Wikipedia. It's the fifth largest website in the world. I think they reach over 500 million unique people every month. Yet, the vast majority, maybe 80% of all their traffic, comes from the developed world. In other words, rich people from North America and Europe. And you'd think the people that need that information most should have access to them. Yet, because they don't have data-capable phones, they just can't access that information. And it's something we realized a couple of years back, and we thought there must be a way to make this information available on low-end phones and feature phones. And so we developed a technology called USSD for Unstructured Supplementary Data Service, and we integrated that with Wikipedia. And that now allows and will allow any person with a low-end phone to be able to search Wikipedia and get the information, exactly the same information that you would get if you access it on a website, to get that on a feature or a dumb phone via text. And they can do this absolutely for free. And we launched this in Kenya earlier this year, and we now intend to scale it out over tens of countries across Africa.
A very exciting project with enormous potential and very visionary. Have you any sense what's the feedback been? Have you any sense of since it's been on the ground, how people are reacting?
We've had, with Wikipedia Text, we've now had over 100,000 people access the service. And I think the really interesting thing for us is how interesting it is, the type of things people query. And so we were quite surprised and couldn't understand why we were getting so many queries around solar eclipses. And of course, it was because there was a solar eclipse happening in Kenya. And I think one of the interesting side effects, unintended consequences of building the service, is that Wikipedia Text is now also an invaluable resource to be able to tell what is going on in a country. So for instance, we're thinking about collaborating with academia to do some analysis on the types of searches people do in Kenya and in other developing countries, to use that as a predictor in public health, for instance. So if people start searching for certain medical conditions, it'll be a predictor for us in that country that potentially there's a public health hazard.
One thing that seems clear to me is that you're not working alone. This is not you in an office coming up with an idea and maybe trying to sell it. Behind this, there's a philosophy of collaboration. You're working with other organizations, and that seems to be a key part of what are making these projects so successful. Can you talk a little bit about your ideas about that and how important you see that?
We think collaboration is key to building services for the majority world and the developing world. And it really starts with our end users. For any person who's thinking about building a social enterprise, I would always say start with the people that you're trying to reach. Paul Pollack used to have these rules, the three don't bother rules. And his first rule was, if you haven't spoken to 25 people that you're trying to reach, don't bother. Which I think is a fantastic rule, and I just think it's such a great inspiration to finding solutions. Just to go and speak to people that you're trying to help and ask them, what are your pain points? And in any given day, when you get up in the morning and you go through your day, where do you struggle? Do you struggle to get to work, to pay for medical services, to get medical services? Do you struggle because it's not in your vernacular? All those, each and every single pain point is for me an inspiration for a brand new product. And that is where Wikipedia Text came from for us, because we were chatting to people and they just didn't have the capability to get that type of information, yet they had mobile phones. So I think for us, that's always the start of any new project. In terms of collaboration with other partners, the beauty of software development lately is the open source movement. And by its very nature, developing software in open source means you're collaborating, you're sharing with other people. You're building tools and products on top of other pieces of software that people have spent many hundreds and thousands of man hours in developing. And by its very nature, open source technology just makes the entire process much more collaborative, much more open, and much less prone to error. Some of the organizations that we love working with are... and what we've seen is very successful now is also private-public partnerships. So private companies that want to have a social impact, collaborating with philanthropic organizations to have a much bigger impact because of the collaboration.
That's very interesting. You've come 10 years, 12 years on a journey. What's your vision? Over what time frame do you think about what you want to achieve and what is in your sight at the moment?
So we have a 6-year 2020 vision, and by 2020 we believe that every single human being that we want to reach will have a mobile device. That means every single person, no matter how whether they live in poverty or not, and where in the world they are, will have a personal mobile device through which we can reach them to deliver life-saving information. Now, right now we live in a world where people can get Facebook for free, but yet they cannot get maternal health information for free. I don't think that is the right state of the world to be in. And so our vision is, and what we work tirelessly towards, and to live in that world where every single person has access to life-saving information for free on their mobile devices.
Very exciting. Can you tell me about some of the challenges you've had along the way in building this organization?
So running any business can be challenging. There's no business that is not going to have tough times, whether it be cash flow or whether it be resource issues or timing issues or software that doesn't work. I think for us, how we overcame those things, and I would say to any social entrepreneur, would be to make sure that you have a set of, whether it's formal like an advisory board or it's informal like a mentor, it's invaluable to have somebody you can reach out to, because every entrepreneur and every business is going to have tough times, and you're going to have days when you get up and you don't understand, you don't know how you're going to get through that day. But it's amazing to be able to speak to another entrepreneur, another mentor, somebody else who's gone through that, who can just give you a little bit more insight, who can think a little bit further, who can see, you know, around the next bend, which you might not be able to see through at that time. And so my advice would be, make sure that you have that personal board of directors that you can reach out to when you hit tough times.
Excellent. In terms of the growing a social entrepreneurial business or a social business with social impact, clearly there are questions around scaling. Mm. But before that, I suppose there's a fundamental issue around, is this viable?
Mm.
Is this something that, can we make change here? Can we make change on a sustainable basis? Is this something I can do? Can you talk to me a little bit about that, how to think about that? Because that seems, you know, a somewhat more complex challenge than if you're launching a new widget of one kind or another, when you're trying to think about the social side of it and the product side, however it's configured.
So I think there's a really interesting transition and a very complex transition from taking something which has got a social impact to something that scales. And I think there's a fundamental difference in a way, because if you try and have a social impact, invariably what you're looking for is an area of market failure. If there wasn't market failure, then capitalism would have solved the problem, most probably, you know, we're given enough capital. So you're looking for something where capitalism didn't solve the problem. So it's an area of market failure. And we find invariably when you look at those problems and you try and address them, you usually start with a little experiment or on a pilot. And you try something at small scale. And what we found, and what I've seen happen a lot with social entrepreneurs, is that you find an interesting problem, you find a potential solution, but because of the way you're solving the problem, invariably it's a very small solution to that problem. And where we see most people have then a problem is, once that's successful, is how do you scale that solution? Because you might have inadvertently designed flaws into your solution because you were only thinking about that little pilot. You were thinking, I've got one village in one town, one little place, one county in the east of Kenya where I need to get maternal messages to mothers in that village. And you might have thought that the way to solve that problem is to send them SMSs, which you can pay for. And during the pilot, that doesn't matter. But now try and do that for 10 million mothers in Nigeria across the whole entire country. And it's just designed with inherent flaw in it. And I think most of the problems with marrying social impact work with scaling and sustainable models is that disconnect between finding solutions at the small scale and then being able to transition it into something that really works at a population scale.
Excellent. That's interesting. And that brings up, for me, the question about vision of scale of impact. I spoke to Mike Brown at Zuna, who is very explicit about wanting to build a $1 billion company. And he points out that some people think that's an excellent way of looking at it. Other people have questions. But clearly, having ambitious goals can help. What's your view on setting goals and having big vision about the kind of impact you can have, and what kind of impact that will have on the kinds of organizations that we will see growing over the next 5 to 10 years to create social change?
We build software, and we build software for mobile phones, so we inherently and naturally start thinking about scale when we design solutions. For us, problems don't really get solved unless they can work at scale. And we start thinking about that right from the beginning when we build these type of systems. For us, when we try and design something, we need to think, not necessarily in cash value, a $1 billion business, but we do need to think about, how will this work when 10 million or 100 million people are using the service? How will this impact our infrastructure? How will it impact the cost? Everything has to be modeled in the beginning, and for mobile, it doesn't really work without economies of scale. Having said that, not every business works like this. Not every social impact business has to work at that type of scale. There are many, many business models that don't require that vast a scale. And I also don't think we should be blinded by the internet and by mobile technology to think that every solution has to run at that type of scale. In the end, the reason we want to do scale is because if we have a great solution, we'd love to see that replicated. But there are different ways of doing that. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a top-down internet business with 100 million users. There are very many other ways of solving similar problems, maybe through a franchise model or a bottom-up approach. Maybe by solving a problem by giving the right information to the right person, and that person being able to implement the solution themselves. That's just as effective way to solve a problem than to necessarily build a top-down service that everyone needs to use.
Sounds like you're suggesting a degree of flexibility in thinking and openness. And as you said earlier, this whole social entrepreneurship space is evolving, the different names, different forms, different ways of working. And I suppose also in terms of solving problems, that maybe taking that extra step and looking more creatively at different ways of maybe solving the problem.
Yeah, I think we're just at the beginning stage of this journey. Of, you know, a couple of years ago, 10 years ago, I started a for-profit and a non-profit because social entrepreneurship didn't really exist as a concept. You couldn't go out and raise money as a social entrepreneur. You could raise money as a for-profit organization. You could raise money as a charity, and that's what we did. And so things change. I think it's incredible that there's been this renaissance in the way we think about business and sustainable business, but we've just started scratching the surface in terms of the available business models. 10 years ago, nobody was thinking of mobile as a universal resource that you could just work with. We were still obsessed with things like how do we just deliver the things that we need to deliver to the recipients. And that was where most of the money went in development aid 10 years ago. That problem has just disappeared now, essentially. And we haven't even started thinking about the types of services we can deliver when every human being has got a mobile device. We haven't even started building those services yet. And I think if the cost of access drops to such a large amount that it essentially becomes zero, then whole new business models are going to become possible. And also sustainable business models where there is actually some revenue built in for the people that do to deliver those life-saving services.
Well, that's interesting, and I think we're definitely seeing more and more people being drawn into one form of social entrepreneurship or another, trying to find ways to build social impact and marry it with some kind of sustainability in one form or another. So what would you say to aspiring social entrepreneurs that want to create change, maybe wanting to do something that you're doing, thinking about, you know, using technology to, you know, provide information to people? Just setting out on this journey, what kind of things do you think would be helpful for them to keep in mind?
My advice, or if I had one piece of advice for an aspiring social entrepreneur, or even just an entrepreneur, it would be start with your user. Start with real problems. You can't go wrong doing that. I think as I'm an engineer, and as engineers, we sometimes make the mistake of building solutions and then looking for the problems afterwards. But you cannot go wrong when you just walk into a township, walk into a small village, go to a rural area, speak to the people that you're trying to help, and ask them. Don't patronize. Ask them, how can I make your life better? And I think if you can start with that, you'll be inspired in so many ways to find interesting solutions. And very often the solution's already there, but it's just hiding in plain sight. And just understanding people's hopes, dreams, and desires will enable you to build a fabulously transformative, disruptive social impact service.
Very exciting. Very exciting. We talked about inspiration and how social entrepreneurs can be inspired and will be inspired by hearing your journey. What inspires you? Are there figures, are there individuals who have created organizations, created social change, figures in the world of business or otherwise that have inspired you on your journey?
I think we all inspired somewhere by somebody in building what we're building. For me personally, the two people that really inspired me for different reasons are Muhammad Yunus, and I think because of the way that he completely rethought how debt and equity and capital can work and money can work and completely revolutionized the way that money was being lent in the developing world. I'm really inspired by that model. And then on the other side, I'm really inspired by Steve Jobs, not necessarily just as a human being, but because of the organization he built and the attention to detail and the incredible quality of products that they built. Not necessarily as a social entrepreneur, but I think just having a long-term vision and being able to build and to be able to stay true to that vision, I think, is incredible.
Yeah, that's excellent, excellent. And are there any books, just books, something like that, that you've read that you think inspire?
I'm all reading at the moment. I think a must-read, although that's now, it's almost you could call it a classic, is the Prahad. The Fortune at the Base of the Pyramid, which I think is a must-read for any social entrepreneur. Obviously, Muhammad Yunus's book. I'm recently very inspired by the founder and CEO of Patagonia. And I think Patagonia is, as a very, matter of fact, maybe I can change my answer about who inspires me. At the moment, the person who inspires me most is Yves Schoenaerts from Patagonia. Interestingly, because it's not a social impact business. It's a for-profit business. In the last 6 years, they've grown their revenue by, I think they tripled their revenue, doubled their profits, and they started in a normal for-profit business to give away 1% of the turnover or 10% of their profit to environmental causes, but a 100% for-profit business, but a really responsible business. Now, I find that really inspiring, and I'm really. He wrote the book called The Responsible Company, which I find really. I'm lately very inspired by that.
Excellent, excellent. I'm just going to go back to something we talked about earlier on, because I think it is interesting. Just go into more detail if you have just a moment on the maternal project and some of the impact that. See that having now, maybe a snapshot of when you set it up and where it's going now and the next step in that project.
Yeah, I think Mama and the maternal health project that we worked on is a incredibly interesting and hopefully it'll be inspiring in future to other people model for how to build social impact services. We started with the area of market failure. Mothers did not get the right information and they didn't have the money to get to clinics to get the right information. We built an organization together with a whole bunch of partners that we collaborated. We had philanthropic investment, we had multilateral organizations, and most importantly, we had government involved. We built a pilot, but we designed the pilot so it could scale. We tested it for 2 years. We managed to get to 100,000 mothers, and now government has announced that they're making this the national universal maternal health project for South Africa. I think there's so many lessons to be learned. And certainly we believe that's a great model for building social impact services. Finding the areas of market failure, building a solution, showing that it can scale, and then making it a public service. And so that's really a fairy tale. If I can, 1 out of 10 projects can have that type of success, I'd be very happy.
That's very exciting. Have you any sense of the impact it's having? You say 100,000 mothers. What do you measure? What are you looking at? And what gives you hope, the overall impact of this?
So in South Africa, Mama is now reaching 100,000 women. There are 1 million live births every year. So within the next year, 1 million women will be registered in the service, which means for the first time ever, South Africa will have a universal birth registry, which will allow South Africa to measure the impact of the program, but also just to have a baseline measurement about maternal and child health. We're already seeing the outcomes in the cohort, in our pilot of 100,000 women, increases in maternal and child health from HIV/AIDS infections and other premature deaths. So we're hugely excited. I think it's if we can get to a place where every single birth is registered and we can measure our impact and improve over time, that'll be amazing.
Well done. Congratulations. Thank you very much for taking the time to share with us, your journey and your inspirations, and very inspiring.
Thanks, Virgil, and thanks for the time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Inspiring Social Entrepreneur podcast. I hope you found this interview inspiring. Please make sure to visit www.inspiringsocialentrepreneurs.com and subscribe to make sure you don't miss any future podcasts.